Thank you, Leon, and thanks everyone for coming. So in today's talk, I just want to give a flavor of what other symmetries can do to enhance topological classification and to give new classes of topological insulators. So this work was done in collaboration with Jen Thagg at Princeton, Matthew Gilbert, and I'll be touching on earlier work done with Taylor Hughes and Emil Prodan. So basically, there's four things that I really want to talk about. First, I want to point out that there are topological insulators with different symmetries besides time reversal, at least theoretically. We unfortunately don't have examples of them experimentally yet, but they will come. And I'm going to give examples of those with inversion symmetry, and then I'm going to go to more point group symmetry materials or insulators, and actually point out that even though the theory we're going to develop is applicable for insulators, it actually was kind of more useful for predicting topological metals, that, you know, valve metals or other types of metals. And then I'm going to quickly touch on a new way of realizing some exotic symmetry in Majorana fermions and as a playground for interacting effects. And I don't think I'll get to the latter part of the talk. But first, I want to define a topological insulator. I want to define it a little bit more broadly than was defined before. And I'm only going to be talking about non-interacting topological insulators. So these are all band insulators where you fill some band. And the way I'm going to define a topological insulator is by defining what it's not. Okay? So first, what it's not, is not a gas of particles, or it's not an atomic limit. So if I put s and p orbitals on a lattice, which, you know, they have some on-site energy, the energy of s and the energy of p orbital, and take the lattice constant of the size of the universe, there's no hopping between them, that's the atomic limit. And in the atomic limit, the bands are really simple. They've got no dispersion, they've got nothing. So that's, by default, the most trivial thing you can have. So, of course, the energy, the gap here is the energy difference between the on-site energies of the s and p orbitals. So now I'm going to do a thought experiment and take this lattice constant from the size of the universe to the size of angstroms that, you know, experimentalists have in the lab, or we all have in front of us. And I'm going to ask the question, can we do that without closing the bulk gap and without breaking any of the symmetries that we require to put on the system? And there's two answers to that question. First of all, if we can't do this, so if you can't take this lattice and shrink it down to the size of materials, then it means that the topological, that it means that the insulator that we reach in the lab, assuming that we reach an insulator, is a topological insulator. And it also means that if I put this insulator, kind of by default, if I put this insulator close to an atomic limit once, if I fill up the, you know, Milky Way with an atomic limit insulator and the Andromeda with a non-trivial insulator, somewhere where they touch, something will happen. And what will happen? Well, what will happen is, by default, if I can't go from one to the other adiabatically, there will be gapless edge modes or surface modes. Now, there is a catch to this, and this is why topological insulators mostly have gapless edge states, that this distance basically is an adiabatic parameter. So really, you can think of it as an adiabatic parameter. And these gapless edge modes will exist if the adiabatic parameter doesn't break the symmetry that stabilizes this insulator. So time reversal, for example, is one of the symmetries that's not broken by a surface unless the surface has magnetic materials. And of course, as we know, all these insulators that were discovered in a lot of the past 6 years have gapless edge modes or gapless surface states like these Dirac cones. Of course, you put in magnetic impurities, you gap them. So now, this is a table, a periodic table of topological insulators, the famous Ryu, Schneider, Ludwig, and Kitaev, etc. table. So basically, all these classes mean time reversal particle hole plus minus zero means non plus minus means d squared equals 1 or minus 1, etc. And you see here you have a classification of topological insulators, but you see you've also got a lot of nothings. So a lot of dots, which means there's no topological class, which means that with these symmetries, you can't really, you know, you can take an atomic limit and continue it to anything else, any other insulator, without breaking, adiabatically, without breaking any of the symmetries that are given here. So the question that we wanted to ask is, what can we do to get topological classes in these, for example, in all these places where you don't have a topological class, or, for example, to enhance certain topological classes from Z2 to Z or to even higher classifications. And several things came out of that research. First of all, came out of classification of topological insulators when you don't have edge modes. If you'd cut them, you wouldn't know what to see. And that's to the entanglement spectrum, which I won't be able to get to. And then topological metals that I'll be talking about, and certain ways of engineering surface states, exotic surface states, again stabilized by point group symmetry. So now I'm going to start talking about point group symmetry. And the easiest thing that I can do is talk about 1D, just to illustrate the concept. And the 1D, the most simple concept, is the dimerized chain. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to pick my old model of two orbitals per site, or a unit cell needed for an insulator. And I'm going to start playing games with it. First game I play is adder hopping. Now, this is a metal, obviously, and this is a reduced Brillouin zone. This is just cosine of K dispersion. Okay. And then I'm going to dimerize it a little bit, if my PowerPoint works. Okay, so I'm going to dimerize it. And now I'm open a gap, obviously, where the bands crossed. And if I was to plot the charge profile on this insulator, the charge profile would look, it would be kind of like a, if I half fill it, and it would be, and I plot the charge profile in of this occupied band, it would be kind of a Gaussian somewhere, localized somewhere. But if I don't have any symmetry, really, I can play around with the parameters and make this, basically these are Vanya centers for more technical terms, but I can really put them anywhere. I can put them within the same unit cell or in between unit cells if I don't have any symmetry. But now, if I have symmetry, if I have, for example, inversion symmetry, which is something that I'll be talking about, then there's only two spots for this centers of Vanya cells where they can sit. And they can sit in between this, in between the A and B sites of the same unit cell, or they can sit in between unit cells. Those are just the two by the two positions stabilized by inversion symmetry. Now, if I go from one to another, so if I go from localized within the same unit cell to in between unit cells, all I need to do is take a dimerization to zero and put another dimerization to non-zero. And that, of course, goes through my metal. So it goes through a metallic state. So obviously, these two states with inverse symmetry are topologically different. Now, choosing which one is topological is a matter of definition of the unit cell, but they're certainly topologically different. And moreover, if I decide that this is my unit cell and I cut in between unit cells, then, of course, as you see, you're going to get a charge E over 2 at the edge of each of this chain, one at one edge, one at the other edge. Now, with inversion symmetry, however, the other thing that I can do is I can add a perturbation on the same edge. They will kind of lift these edge states. So without them being in the gap, I can just kind of lift them and move them into the continuum. Now, that doesn't happen with particle hole symmetry, and that's, you know, the difference between the dimerized chain and the Majorana chain at one body level. There's not much difference at one body level besides the fact that you have a symmetry which keeps these modes at zero. They can't just go up. But basically, the concept that I introduced here is that with inversion symmetry, and no, so these are spinless electrons. I didn't put any time reversal on them. There's topological, there's two distinct topological classes, one trivial, one non-trivial. There's a phase transition between them that would disappear without this inversion symmetry. And there's no edge modes. There's no protected edge modes. So the edge modes can kind of go out. Why is this? Well, obviously, the boundary here breaks. It's kind of not an adiabatic perturbation because it breaks inversion symmetry, really. So now, let me give you a little bit more of a flavor of what point group symmetry can bring to the table. And let's go to other types of groups. And let's ask, for example, when. So I showed you that point group symmetry doesn't always have a gapless edge states, but when would it have gapless edge states? And there's two criterions that one is kind of a very simple thing that to do, but there's two criterions that are required to have gapless edge states. So first of all, as I said before, it must be the adiabatic parameter on the surface. It does not break the symmetry that stabilizes the insulators. For example, an insulator is stabilized by some rotation, Cn symmetry group, like C6 or C4 or whatever, will have a possibility of having gapless states on this surface. But on this surface, most likely, it will not have gapless states unless you fine-tune some parameters. Okay. So is this all that you need? Well, that's actually not all that you need. Even if you have this axis and a surface which doesn't break the rotational symmetry, for example, let's take a C4 as an example. You're still not guaranteed to have surface states. Why? Well, because most surface states appear when, like in topological insulators, you have chiral and antichiral, or you have a Dirac fermion. So most of the times you need kind of a crossing point and a gapless point that you can't split. So you need two states basically to sit. If I have a gapless point, I'll have two states that are the same energy. And in mathematical terms, that means that the representation, the group that stabilizes the insulator, has to have at least a two-dimensional irreducible representation. So for example, let's do this with C4. Can C4 by itself stabilize a topological class with gapless edge states? And the answer is no. Why? Well, although it has a surface, the one thing that it doesn't have is two-dimensional representation. C4 is an abelian group. Abelian groups don't have two-dimensional representations. So something else must be added to C4 to be able to get a topological insulator with gapless edge states. And the simplest thing that you can add is time reversal symmetry, which is spinless, so complex conjugation, for example. And with complex conjugation, it becomes very clear that you can have a gapless surface state. Why? Because I immediately make the little group, which is the group that basically commutes to the Hamiltonian at this point, have a two-dimensional representation. So for example, if I have C4, C4 to the fourth power is 1, so it's got eigenvalues plus minus 1 or plus minus I. And if I focus on plus and minus I eigenvalues and also apply time reversal, spinless time reversal, then it becomes clear that the I eigenvalue and the minus I eigenvalue have to be degenerate, and that's the doublet. And of course, you can build a model that does this. So now let's go to more into the depth of point group symmetries, and look at inversion symmetry. And this will come to fruition in basically predicting a topological metal. although, as I said, the theory is for insulators. So basically, all these point group symmetries, they're not anti-unitary like time reversal. So in a sense, they have eigenvalues, and they have eigenvalues at high symmetry points. So for example, unitary symmetry like inversion has eigenvalue plus or minus I, so you just can basically characterize your bands by the set of eigenvalues plus or minus 1. And this happens at all the time reversal symmetric points, which are the same as the inverse symmetric points. Okay, so the question that we can ask, kind of like Fu and Kane did, is knowing the inversion eigenvalues are all symmetry points, what can we say about the system? What phase is it in? What kind of observable does it have? And what's the topology of the system? Okay. So that's actually not a solved problem. So just given a full set of eigenvalues, you're not. So I can give you, I can give you many bands with plus and minus eigenvalues, etc. We don't know a full classification in terms of response functions of those systems. But we do know some cases, and we do know how to characterize those systems through the entanglement spectrum, but we don't know a response function. But in some cases, we do know the response functions. For example, this is the simplest case in 1D, the dimerized chain that I showed you before. And that dimerized chain basically has the following property. So in its atomic limit, it's got, with inverse symmetry, it's got all the inversion eigenvalues of the occupied band at 0 and pi are the same, either plus or minus, that's a gauge choice, but they're the same. Now, in the dimerized, in the other non-trivial limit, in the other dimerized limit, then the eigenvalues, one of these eigenvalues basically switches. And so you can immediately see that the occupied band has, this is a very poor setup of the projector. Yes, okay. You can immediately see that the product of the inversion eigenvalues of the occupied band is minus 1. And actually, you can prove that, you can do a little bit more work. It's not very much work. It's basically 5 minutes worth of work. But you can prove that the charge polarization in this chain can be either 0 or pi, depending on whether the center of a Vanier state is within the same unit cell or between unit cells. And it's exactly given, whether it's 0 or pi, by the product of the inversion eigenvalues at 0 and pi. OK, so now if you go to two dimensions, the other thing that you can do with point group symmetry, just as Fu and Kane basically did for time reversal invariant topological insulators, you can ask what happens if you lose time reversal invariance. And it turns out that if you lose time reversal invariance, the easiest thing to do is to relate the Chern number parity. And I assume I won't go into what the Chern number is, but basically the whole conductance parity in two dimensions. to the product of eigenvalues of inversion symmetry. And that's actually very easy to do. In two dimensions, you have, again, four inversion symmetric points with eigenvalues at those four. An inversion has eigenvalues at those four inverse symmetric points. And now, if I go to the atomic limit, so without time reversal invariance, I can make bands separate. That's a different thing. But basically, in the atomic limit, as I said, the bands are not dispersing, so each of these points will have the same inversion eigenvalue. So if each of these points have the same inversion eigenvalue, then their product, the product of the inversion eigenvalues, is 1, because they have eigenvalues plus minus 1. And then the Chern number is 0, because the band doesn't have any dispersion. So the following relation holds, okay, trivially. So now I'll show you that this relation holds if you take this insulator and make it non-trivial. So for example, crossings, so to go from the atomic limit to a non-trivial insulator, I have to cross bands somewhere, right? I have to not go adiabatically, I can't go. So I have to go and cross bands. And these bands crossings can happen in many points. But now the point is, if one band crossing happens here with inversion symmetry at some non-high symmetry point, then another band crossing must happen here. When a band crossing happens between two bands, that's like a Dirac fermion closing and opening the gap. From graphing, we know that changes the Hall conductance by 1. So if a band crossing happens here and here, each of these band crossings changes the Hall conductance of the Chern number by 1. The inversion eigenvalues don't change because I haven't made any crossing here. And this relationship is, again, valid. Right, because I haven't changed, this is positive, but the Chern number changed by 2. One here, one here. Now, if a band crossing, however, happens at a high symmetry point, like here, or here, or here, or here, then an inversion eigenvalue flips. So this power becomes negative, but also one Dirac fermion changes mass. So that also is reflected in minus 1 to the Chern number changing sign. So basically, this relationship is valid in all these cases, and that's a simple way of understanding how global, you know, relationship between eigenvalues and the parity Chern number occurs. Now, of course, this can actually be, so this is, there's more theory, but the point is this can be extended to CN symmetry groups. So basically, if I have a rotation axis and a CN, an n-fold rotation axis, then the eigenvalues of that rotation operator determine the Chern number mod n. And that's kind of, you know, you can kind of imagine that that's true. So for example, C4 determines the Chern number mod 4. Now, of course, people in graphene knew that already. So graphene is really a topological semi-metal with or without CC3 symmetry. So even if you break C3, you still the Dirac terms still kind of sit around. They don't break. And also, however many hoppings you put, graphene is still stable. And the simplest reason to understand this is, you know, it was known actually before, it's that if you compute the product of the inversion eigenvalues for most cases in graphene, unless you like stretch it very, very much, if you compute the product of the inversion eigenvalues, it gives you minus 1. But with time reversal, and you actually need inversion for that, obviously, because you compute the product inversion eigenvalues. But with time reversal, the Chern number can only be 0. So then, by the previous theorem, there's a problem that, you know, the parity of the Chern number, which is 0, is not equal to the product of the eigenvalues. So this system cannot be an insulator. And that's the end of story. Now, in three dimensions, the situation gets a little bit more complicated, but it's roughly the same thing. There's a global constraint on the inversion eigenvalue on the inversion eigenvalues of a band, and this global constraint says the following: if I have a band in a reversion symmetric material with eigenvalues whose product, inversion eigenvalues whose product is minus 1, then that band is by default cannot be separated from all the other bands, so the system is by default a metal. So, for example, this is a case in which this band has eigenvalues. There's one eigenvalue minus, so the product is minus 1. And you can see here two vowel nodes that cross. So this material is not an insulator. And that's also very easy to understand. Why? Well, if I have inversion symmetry in three dimensions, I can look at the planes kz equals 0 and kz equals pi. And these planes are 2D inversion symmetric by themselves. The previous inversion eigenvalue equation applies. And the product of the inversion eigenvalues on this plane is minus 1 to the Chern number on this plane. The product of inversion eigenvalues of this plane is minus 1 to the Chern number on this plane. And if the system is an insulator, then the Chern number on this plane and the Chern number on this plane cannot differ. And that means the product of the inversion eigenvalues on all the 8 points, which is this plane times this plane, has to be even, because it's minus 1 to the Chern number here plus the Chern number here, which is the same if the system is an insulator. So if the system is an insulator, the product of the inversion eigenvalues of one band has to be 1. Okay? So that's actually, you can apply this to mercury chromium selenide. And what you see in mercury chromium selenide is actually kind of interesting. What you see is that the k is equals to 0 plane has, so the, in a magnetized state, this is the magnetization on the 0, 0, 1 axis. And the symmetry group is a product of C4 times a mirror. The mirror doesn't matter for our purposes. C4 does matter. And what you see is that if you apply the formula before of the C4 eigenvalues relating to Chern number mod 4, you see that the Kz equals 0 plane and the Kz equals pi plane have different C4 eigenvalues. And moreover, that the Chern number in mod 4 in the k is equal to 0 plane is equal to 0, and Chern number mod 4 in the k is equal to pi plane is equal to 2. So you know that by default, there has to be somewhere a gapless point in between them. And this point is, so now you ask, can this point be somewhere at some non-high symmetry point? And the answer is no. Why? Well, at least there must be one point at a crossing point at a high symmetry point. Why? Well, if it was at somewhere where it's not a high symmetry point, then C4 symmetry will give you actually 4 crossings rather than just 2, which you know there must be 2 because the Chern number changes by 2. So they give you, as a function of Kz, it gives you, so basically C4 symmetry makes these 2 Weyl fermions, which kind of could sit anywhere if you didn't have C4 symmetry, puts them at the same spot and gives you a quadratic touching in the z direction. Okay, so this, so basically what does inversion symmetry give you? Well, apparently inverse symmetry there's a lot more that I haven't told you about, but to summarize, it can give you half, it can give you basically the polarization in one dimension, it can give you the Chern number parity, even 3D, it can give you many more things, it can give you a topological metal, it can actually give you the same theta term that time reversal topological insulators can, so basically it can give you the same theta equals to pi axion term that time reversal topological insulators have, but all these systems with inversion symmetry do not necessarily have edge modes because the surface termination is not an adiabatic termination. Now, most of these things, most of these responses that I've talked about here can be read from the eigenvalue tables of inversion, just like in the Fu and K formula. But there's many more eigenvalue configurations that are not related to response functions yet, and I don't know if they ever will be. So that's this statement. Okay, so now I want to actually go to my Rana to basically show you how using point group symmetry can basically give you a playground for interacting effects in Majorana fermions. Okay, so the ingredients of this proposal are threefold. First of all, I need a zero mode in a vortex here, core. I need a crystalline topological insulator, which I'll tell you what it is, with time reversal symmetry, and a superconductor coating. So first of all, let's see the vortex. So the vortex is a very easy, I don't know if I'm going to explain this, but the point is there's a very easy way of understanding that a vortex core in a chiral superconductor has to have a zero mode in the middle, and that's just all you need to know for that is just that the Hilbert space, the one-body Hilbert space of a superconductor is always even, and the fact that you have an edge mode, since it's a chiral superconductor, with some sort of a projector Chern number, you have an edge mode. That's all you need to know, and you can prove that a vortex must have a mid-gap state in its core. Okay, but now the moral of the story is that although the classification of the topological superconductor is Z because it's defined by a Chern number. Of the projector Chern number, the classification of the defect is Z2 in the sense that if I have a chiral superconductor with a C number of edge modes, I won't have C0 motes in the core of a vortex. I'll have C mod 2. And why is that? Well, that's very easy to see. Say I have two. I have a chiral superconductor with two edge motes, kind of like a double strontium ruthenide or something. Two edge motes. Then it's immediately clear that if I would have two zero modes in a vertex core, there's a term, which is this is one Majorana, this is another Majorana. There's a term that I can write down, kind of a coupling one-body term between them. They will split these modes. Okay, so that's kind of a well-known fact that the characterization of defects can be very different from the characterization of the parent state. So this, the vortices are Z2, the topological superconductor is Z. Okay, so what symmetry would actually make these stick together? Well, there's a very simple symmetry that would, and that's time reversal for spinless particles or complex conjugation. Why? Because with time reversal for complex conjugation, I could not write down this one-body term, because I would just go into minus I, and this term would be odd under time reversal. However, there's a problem. I put a vortex in. I don't have time reversal. So how do we realize this symmetry? And the reason to do this is basically the fact that once you have this extra symmetry, such as complex conjugation, the system becomes very, very interesting in the sense that the single particle classification is now Z, because I can add as many of these Majorana modes here, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, and I still can't write this one-body term down with time reversal. But the interacting classification was pointed out a few years back. It's actually Z8. So if I put 8 Majoranas, I'm able to completely split them. So it's very interesting to actually be able to realize this and play games with Majorana fermions, see how the interactions basically split them. So the first thing of maintaining kind of time reversal without a vortex, it's actually very easy to do, and it was shown to us by Fu and Kane. You just take a topological insulator and you coat it with an SA superconductor, and that really acts like a P-wave superconductor, but with time reversal, P plus IP, but with time reversal symmetry. And we can talk about that later. But however, now when you add a vortex, that's still got a Z2 classification, because you've still basically broken time reversal by adding a vortex. So now the next ingredient is crystalline topological insulators, and these require a mirror symmetry, and I can just explain to you very fast what they are. They're insulators which have a mirror plane, and they can appear in time reversal variants or not. The ones that I'll be talking about are time reversal variants. So if they have a mirror plane, then at least, so say here I have the XZ as a mirror plane, then at least the KY equals to zero plane, the Hamiltonian is a function of KZ and KX, commutes with this mirror operator, so I can basically separate my Hamiltonian into two blocks, one of them of mirror eigenvalue plus I, the other one of mirror eigenvalue minus I. And then each of these blocks, I can compute a Chern number for them in this two-dimensional plane, XZ plane. And of course, the Chern number, if I have time reversal invariance, the Chern number for this block is going to be exactly minus the Chern number for this block. And that's called mirror Chern number, just the Chern number of one of these sub-blocks. But the crucial point is that say I have Chern number for the mirror eigenvalue plus I plus 3 and Chern number for the mirror eigenvalue minus I minus 2. That means that if I actually made a termination here in the Z direction, plotted the bands versus KZ, then three bands would be chiral, because I have this Chern number. Two bands would be anti-chiral. But the point is these degeneracy points here would not split because they have different eigenvalues on the mirror symmetry. So now, the crystalline topological insulator that was found, predicted, and found in nature actually has also time reversal invariance. So the Chern number of the bands with eigenvalue plus I is 2, and the one with eigenvalue minus I is minus 2. And what you get is the following thing. There's two mirror planes, so that's why you see two things. But basically, let's just concentrate on this mirror, on this line, which is one of the mirror planes. And what you see is you see two Dirac nodes here, one here, and one here, are two Fermi surfaces coming from Dirac nodes. And the reason, if I would cut like this and plot the energy dispersion versus this momentum, I would see something like this. These points do not split because of mirror symmetry. And this is really what a crystalline topological insulator means. The Kondo one, I don't believe it's a crystalline topological insulator. It's a very interesting weak and strong topological insulator. Okay, so now take this in mind. And in the last slide, take a crystalline topological insulator and put a superconducting layer on it, and now add vortices into the system. So what's going to happen? Well, first of all, let's look at the symmetry. Since I have a vortices are kind of like magnetic fields, and since I have a magnetic field and a magnetic field is axial, a magnetic field that's parallel to this mirror plane actually breaks mirror symmetry, but also breaks time reversal. So there's a combined symmetry, mirror times time reversal, which flips the magnetic field like this and then flips it back. So mirror times time reversal protects this, is the symmetry of the system, and it also squares to one, just like complex conjugation. So it actually acts, the combined symmetry acts like complex conjugation, or like time reversals for spinless particles. So actually, it forbids a term that looks like this if I had Majorana vortex zero modes in a vortex core here. So basically, it turns out that what happens is that in a crystalline topological insulator, if you do the Kane, Fu, and Kane proposal, then you can get a mirror number of Majorana zero modes in a vortex core, and you know, for mirror turn number two, you get two of them, which won't split because of this symmetry. And if you have eight of them, if you have mirror turn number eight, you get eight of them, which should, by interaction effects, should split. So I think there's a moral of the story. There's a lot of topology in band structure, and it's just waiting to be discovered, basically. There's a lot of topology with or without spin orbit coupling. And there's many other classes that can be identified. Just, you know, we haven't even touched the magnetism. And the topology and point group symmetry can protect insulators or metals, and we should find them. So, thank you.
So because you have higher degeneracy of these Majoranas, does it influence the braiding of such particles?
Yeah, so basically, I mean, if you have more Majoranas, you have a local Hilbert space. So I would say the braiding in this case would be trivial, but I haven't looked at it. But yeah, I would say I haven't looked at it, but I would say the braiding would be. Sorry. I doubt it, because the Hilbert space is really local, so I can just insert, once I have two Majoranas, I mean, I think the braiding is basically still, the non-abelian braiding is still a function of C mod 2, you know, so if I have three Majoranas on a vortex, and I can't have, basically with two Majoranas on a vortex, I have a local Hilbert space, and I don't need any non-local string between two vortices, roughly. So I don't think non-abelian braiding works for these. But
so for the tripolarization, your definition actually is the center of the Wannier function.
Yeah.
Yeah. Actually, I talked to some experimental guys for cold atom, because we have some proposal to realize the